Welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast for October 15th. It's brought to you by Shooters in Nagoya. I'm John Gibson, and joining me as usual is Jim Allen. What's happening, buddy?
I'm just chilling at home. You know, long day, long weekend. I thought the weekend was long, and it's gotten longer.
You only had a long weekend. I've had a long life, dude.
Wow, good for you. Good for you.
Not in a good sense. Not in a good sense, but hey.
I am going to not try to ponder that too much.
Too much. All right. Well, thank you for thinking about me.
I think about you often, man.
All right. This week we're going to discuss round one of the Climax Series playoffs. We're going to discuss the final games for retiring players and touch on some other topics. So let's start clearing the bases. All right, so both Stage 1 Climax Series are tied at 1-1 as we tape the show here on Sunday night. And by the time some of you listen, they'll both be over. I think it'll be after Monday, so.
By the time some of you guys listening, the second stage might be over. Who knows?
Now, I'm sticking with my picks. I'm not going to change horses in what? In what is it, mid-race?
Change your horses in the middle of the stream, although these aren't horses, and I don't see a stream, so maybe that's not appropriate. But
certainly not riding any of these picks. I'm not gonna get on board that have, you know, I'm gonna put all my heart and soul into these picks, but I'm sticking with them. Now, we had some really good action on Saturday and a pair of shutouts on Sunday. And I thought three of the four skippers had bad games on Saturday, and then today I thought just one guy had a bad day on Sunday. But let's start with the PLCS and talk about the Lions against the Hawks at Sabre Dome on Saturday. Now, for me, you know, these short series, you know, anything can happen.
For sure.
You know that. And
yep.
Geez, last year, I know we taped the show on a Monday night, and we were able to get everything in, and we're gonna be talking about stage two essentially in the dark because we don't know who's gonna be playing. But this 2-1 game on Saturday just had so much action, and I really enjoyed watching it. But I think both managers came out looking somewhat iffy on their strategy. One was Koji Akiyama, the SoftBank Hawks manager, decided to yank his ace Tadashi Setsu after 8 innings, and he had thrown 119 pitches and blah, blah, blah. As he was walking, you know, and I was watching on TV, as he was walking off the mound in the 8th inning, having gotten Hiroyuki Nakajima to hit into a double play with a perfectly placed pitch, you know, up in his cold zone. I have the heat maps for some of the players, and his cold zone is up and in. And he got him to ground a ball to short on the cold zone up and in. He was not sweating. Okay, he walked off the mound after 8 innings and 119 pitches. He might have had some sweat under his arms, but there was nothing coming off his brow or anything. This guy could have gone out and finished the game. I think Akiyama was looking ahead.
Oh, okay. Well, that might be. He might have been looking ahead to seeing what Brian Falkenberg could do.
That, too. I mean, you throw a guy out there who hadn't really thrown a lot recently.
Nope.
You really are taking a chance. I mean, you know you've got Morifuku, who has been... This has not been his greatest season, I don't think.
Morifuku?
Yeah.
Well, you make it sound like he's had a lot of them. I mean, basically, he had a breakthrough year last year when
he was pretty good.
He was pressed into service, you know, as an emergency. And this year, nobody was surprised when he could handle the emergencies. So people have seen him a lot more. People are a little, you know, people have made some adjustments. So he's not he's not a shock, but he's still a pretty good pitcher. I mean.
No.
Yeah,
no doubt. And he comes in the 9th inning after the bases are loaded off of Brian Falkenberg with nobody out. And it just reminded me of the Japan series last year. You remember the situation? It was game 4 against the Dragons. And the Dragons loaded the bases in the 6th inning with nobody out. And they bring in Morifuku. And it's a 2-1 game. The Hawks are winning. And it looks like the Dragons are going to at least get the score tied, maybe even go ahead, and he comes in and gets 3 outs without the ball leaving the infield and gets him out of that jam. I know the first 2 batters didn't, obviously the ball didn't leave the infield, but I don't remember how the 3rd out was gotten. But then he comes in on Saturday in the 9th inning with the bases loaded. It looked like the Hawks could, you know, they were down 2 runs. He gives up a ground ball that allows everybody to advance, but he gets the out for the RBI. This is Chris Carter batting, and he gets him. And then this is where I really think Hisanobu Watanabe Nabekyu got himself into trouble as the manager of the Lions. I think he pulled Ginjiro Sumitani, his catcher, early in the game for no reason.
Right.
And they only have two catchers on the roster now. It's not all his. It's not all Nabe Q's fault. I'm not sure who would be setting the roster if it's he's working in conjunction with someone else to set the roster. But if you're going to only have two catchers, why are you yanking your catcher to play? When you know there's a Morifuku in the bullpen out there,
mm-hmm.
and there's a chance that you might have to put Tatsuyuki Uemoto up against him. Why are you pulling your catcher so early?
Well, first of all, I haven't looked at the, I haven't had a good look at their roster. In fact, we ought to have a look. But the Lions have a lot of guys who can catch, who aren't listed as catchers right now.
But they also had, I thought Hiroshi Higao, the guy I really love, and I always talk so fondly of him, and he's retiring this year. He's not on the playoff roster. In fact, I think he was on the radio today doing some commentary. I mean, he's not.
Well, he's not one of the guys who can catch. So.
I was talking to one of the beat writers today. I think they said he's like an emergency catcher, but maybe he's like number two or three emergency guy. I think he can put the tools on. I don't know if he can do the job, but he knows how to put the pads on. that's half the battle.
He knows what the tools of ignorance are, but he might be too smart to wear them. Now they have three catchers on the roster. One is Takanori Hoshi, and they have Uemoto.
Right,
and
then Hoshi wasn't on the roster when I looked yesterday.
Okay, he was on the roster today.
Yeah,
and then they've got Hidekazu Hoshi, who's also a catcher.
Okay, yeah.
Of course, and Uemoto is also an outfielder and a first baseman. So they're inside out.
Yeah. Well, I thought that was obviously something that he could have thought about earlier on, and if he got to a situation where he needed to get a pinch hitter up there, he could have done it because he'd only used one catcher, but he was in a hole, so he had to send up Uemoto. He had to send him up there, and of course the outcome was not very good against a guy who killed. Morifuku kills everybody, but left-handers, Uemoto doesn't hit left-handers very well, obviously, being a left-handed batter. It didn't turn out well for him.
Well, Uemoto is a pretty good hitter.
Normally.
I mean, he's basically he could play other positions as well. If it weren't for the fact that he could catch, he'd probably spend more time in the outfield in the first base. But, anyway. So yeah, he's a better choice than Ginjiro, probably. But anyway, it's not, I don't think it's a big deal because like I said, he's got one of those Hoshis could come in and catch as well, and it's not a big problem.
Right. Had they been, when I looked on the roster, that's immediately what I went to yesterday during the game, on Saturday during the game, and I checked, and I'm like, oh, gosh, they only have two guys, and where is Hidao? Because I'm pretty sure he's one of the emergency guys, and he's not there, and, it was just awful. And, of course, they didn't get many base runners. They didn't have a chance to put guys in motion or anything. And, obviously you can't just put anybody, you can't put on a hit and run, they're going to bunt anyway in the playoffs. We know when they get a run around, they're pretty much going to bunt.
Yeah, you're not kidding. Yeah, actually, okay, now I'm looking at the roster, the active bench roster for Game 1, and you're correct that Takanori Hoshi was not on the bench, but Hidekazu Hoshi, who did catch once this year, who came to the was a former catcher, and he was a catcher through last year.
Mm-hmm.
And he's been a center fielder for him this year, but he did catch once this year, and he was on the bench, so he would have been their third catcher. Both does okay as a catcher. He's nothing special, but.
Yeah, he's not going to kill you. He's not going to help you. He's just out there. But it was just unfortunate. And again, he didn't have much to work with. They weren't getting a lot of base runners against Setsu, who was just really masterful yesterday or Saturday.
Yeah.
So they didn't have a chance. But I thought, and while Akiyama made that, I just thought he yanked Setsu when it was unnecessary. It's just a two-run lead. That's a pretty precarious lead in playoffs, as we know. And but you have to give him credit for the squeeze early on for the first run. I think it was the second inning, and he had Kenta Imamiya squeeze for the first run, and it was a pretty amazing squeeze in that Kazuhisa Makita, the Seibu starter, I think they had an idea that he might squeeze. And they threw the ball at his body. I mean, it was really way off the plate. It was in the batter's box. It would have been, if the plate was right in the middle of the batter's box, it would have been a strike.
Yeah.
And this kid got his bat on the ball somehow and got the ball on fair ground. It was quite amazing. And this is all while he's getting out of the way of the ball. But I'm thinking in that case, if you think there's going to be a squeeze. You throw the ball high, you bounce it up there, or you throw it way outside. But they gave him an opportunity to try to get the bat on it, and he didn't. Because, I mean, you don't want to hit him either, because that's just going to put him on base.
Well, that's the other thing. I mean, you just stand there and let him hit you, and you got the bases loaded.
Yeah, so it wasn't great strategy by the Lions. I don't know if they just didn't want to call for a pitch. I don't know what the deal was there.
I wonder.
And so I question, and this is after I praised Nabe Q for his in-game tactics early in the week when he got a contract. Well, it wasn't a contract extension, right? It was that they signed him.
Right.
Through next year. So I had good things to say about him. And in the regular season, those things are fine. I mean, it's not such a big deal. But in these short series, everything with everything magnified, I just think he had a bad game.
Well, he's a pretty, I mean, he does like, one of the things I do like about him, is that he likes to hit and run more than most Japanese managers. But he's 9 times out of 10, it's automatic. You bunt here, you bunt there. You squeeze now and then. There's so few surprises in Japanese baseball. So anyway, I can't really talk too much about the game. I didn't see it. I was busy focusing on the Dragons game. So.
Okay. Well, they had the chance in that ninth inning with the bases loaded, two out. I actually tweeted, I think either tweeted or Facebooked it, that maybe we'll see two squeezes here and see the game get tied. And apparently neither one of those guys were capable of getting the bunt down, so they didn't squeeze. So it was just too bad. And I think he helped, you know, obviously the manager's job is to put his players in good positions to win games, and I'm not sure that he actually did that on Saturday. And I'm not sure that Akiyama did it either. So, but they came back, the Lions did on Sunday, and had a great inning.
They came back. It looks like they had there was an exorcism.
Yeah, well, again, I don't think I talked to some of the beat. I went out to the park this morning, and I talked to some of the. I talked to the beat writer of the Yomiuri beat writer of the for the Hawks, and I said, "Well, why are they starting this rookie?" And he said, "Well, the guy's had really good numbers down the stretch." I said, "I don't care. He's a rookie." And I said, "Why not just start Otanari if this rookie, he's been pitching mostly five and dive games anyway." Five, maybe six innings, and he's out. So, I mean, you can do that in game three. What's the difference between doing it in game two and doing it in game
three?
If you do it in game two and you send out Otanari and you win it, you don't have to worry about throwing him at all.
Well, of course, the answer is because Otanari's been five and dive for the last month and a half. That's why.
Well, I mean, now he's going to pitch tomorrow. So now you got him throwing in a pressure situation, but...
I don't know. I'm not a big fan of either of them. Tuckett has been okay. I mean, you're giving him a chance to win, and I think he's done enough to deserve a shot, but I don't think anybody's seen those guys throw enough,
mm-hmm.
From our perspective.
Yeah.
I can't say what his stuff has been. You know, I haven't been watching it religiously like these guys have to do, what the scouts are saying. So,
mm-hmm.
I don't think it was a bad choice. It turned out to be a bad choice, but, I don't see any evidence that says this was a whopper.
I gotcha. And I just think, for me, I would go with the more experienced guy, even if he hasn't been pitching that well.
That's what we're going to see tomorrow.
Yeah, two experienced guys, right?
Two experienced guys who haven't been pitching well, although Otanari's been pitching better. He hasn't got wins because, really, to be honest, the Hawks haven't scored a run since about July.
Not to mention getting no hit in their regular season finale.
So that's kind of a problem. I mean, he had a couple of bad games down the stretch, but he hasn't won, and that's different from Kazuhisa Ishii, who's normally Jekyll and Hyde, but he's been a Jekyll and Hyde with a shoulder trouble
mm-hmm.
this year. He's been in and out. He's had kind of a Brian Falkenberg season. He's pitched quite a bit. I shouldn't compare the two, but he pitched very well at the beginning of the season, but then so did Fumiya Nishiguchi. So,
yeah,
you know, maybe he was the fourth choice to start tomorrow. I don't know.
Yeah, you remember in the playoffs in Stage 1 last year, with Makita won Game 1 at Sapporo Dome, and Nishiguchi won Game 2. So, you know,
the whole story. Nishiguchi was the, I don't know what the, he borrowed Dorian Gray's picture last year, I think.
Well, I'm just looking at it, I'm thinking, you know, I remember also last year when I said Akiyama is the devil because he used Setsu to throw game three in the Japan series and he brought him back in relief in game five. Yep. I can see him maybe getting Setsu ready to throw for game three if they need him tomorrow. Tomorrow meaning Monday, so I mean we could see that too.
I'm not a big fan. I'm of two minds of this. As a fan, I love to see it because it's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
But I also think about a pitcher who seemed very, I'm going to say seemed because I have looked at this guy's history, injury record.
Right.
And a guy who was very durable with an extreme live arm who has been up and down. He's been good, but he's been a little fragile the last 4 years, and that's Takayuki Kishi.
Yeah.
Since the 2008 Japan series, when he made that, you know, he was brought in on short rest, and
he had a bad start in the climax series stage, and then he came back and won in the Japan series, and then they used him in relief, and
yeah, he could have been the MVP of that series as well as Mr. Hirop. So anyway, it was a great series, a lot of fun, but you don't, you know, it's a little scary. I've seen a couple, you know, we have these cases of extreme uses in these series and players don't recover in the way they're used, the way they're conditioned in Japan. It's happened a few times, not unlike what happened to Dontrell Willis in the WBC. I mean, bam. Of course, that's not extreme use. It's just an unusual situation. But in the Japan series, when you take guys out of their normal routine,
mm-hmm.
where they're following their normal training routine in Japan, which is gearing them up to start on 6 or 7 days rest, you know, 5, 6, 7 days rest, and you use them quick, and you turn around and you throw them out of the bullpen, or it's been very dangerous. A couple of pitchers have ruined their careers that way.
Yeah, well, let's wish Kishi the best. I mean, he came out, he threw 6 innings on Sunday, 6 really good innings for them, something I kind of expected him to do, and that was my case for him starting game one, is that you know what you're going to get basically in a playoff situation. You can figure you're going to get a quality start, and that's the best you can hope for against a guy like Setsu. I think that's the best you can hope for, and that's what he gave you, and I think they went to the bullpen because they wanted to save him because they had 8 runs.
Yeah, well, the interesting thing as we get, I think, do you have any more to say about the Pacific League? Because there's a connection here.
Oh, no, I mean, we can move on to the Central League if you're ready.
Yeah, sure, because what I want to get at is all the idiocy. Now, you know, choosing who your starting pitcher is fine, and, you know, you can argue about who's the best choice and this and that. But the whole bit about manipulating your starting rotation to fool the other guys
mm-hmm.
is such a waste of time.
I knew you would love this. And I don't know. I was talking to Michael Westbay, and he was saying that when I was back in the States that he kept seeing in the newspapers that the Central League wasn't going to be announcing its starting pitchers in the Climax Series, and how much sense it didn't make, because the whole season we've been announcing, and then all of a sudden you get to the playoffs and the rules change.
Right. Well, that's it occurred to me after the we've had so many, I mean, just so much stupidity about it, so much wasted time. My first thought was, okay, now we're going to have the Iron Curtain is going to go back into full use at Tokyo Dome.
Right. And for those who don't know,
I was in Sapporo when this thing went up, so I can't really explain what happened.
Yeah, Tokyo Dome, if you go down under the dugout or behind the dugouts, the reporters can actually walk and see since the bullpens are back underneath the seats, essentially, you can't see who's throwing, but you can see who's walking into the bullpen to throw and warm up, so you can figure out who the starting pitcher is going to be. And I guess it was the 2007
Yes.
Climax Series against the Dragons when Hinomichi Ochai kept secret who his starting pitcher was going to be for game one. And he comes out with Takashi Ogasawara when everyone expected someone else. I can't even remember who was supposed to throw that day.
Had to have been Nakata.
And the Giants were thrown off. They weren't expecting it. They'd set their lineup for a right-handed pitcher. They had all these lefties in the lineup, which really didn't make that much of a difference. They were just thrown off. And the next day, they had what Jim is calling the Iron Curtain, which I like, and they made sure that no one knew who was going to be their starter, and they weren't going to divulge that information until game time, until they handed in the lineup cards.
Well, they weren't divulging that information anyway, but here's the difference. At Tokyo, the way Tokyo Dome is configured, the visiting team does not have a big clubhouse. They've got a little dinky miniature clubhouse.
Mm-hmm.
The home team, there used to be two separate clubhouses from the days when the Nippon Ham Fighters shared Tokyo Dome with the Yomiuri Giants. And because of that, in the space where behind the visitor's bench, there's a little mini clubhouse. And then, I mean, just like a lounge. And then there's the visitor's bullpen right behind there.
Mm-hmm.
And the door locked, and people can't wander around seeing who's, you can stand there, but they can just shut the door.
People, by people you mean reporters and other staff, Tokyo Dome staff. Yeah.
So you can't see who's going, you can't necessarily see who's going from the visiting clubhouse into the visiting bullpen. But so, the Giants, on the other side of the field, you have to walk across a big corridor between the clubhouse and the bullpen. And that was open to the media. And I would have to think, did the Dragons stack their lineup against the guy the Giants pitched that day? I don't remember.
No, of course not. They had the same lineup for lefties versus righties. Then they didn't switch anything.
But the Giants wanted to make things fair, so for until this season, and I don't know how it is now. I only went to one Giants game this year for a variety of reasons. But until this year, from 2007 through at least 2011, before the game, you were not permitted to take a roundabout route. The old route from the press area to the Giants side of the field was blocked by twin aluminum, I guess made out of aluminum doors that blocked the corridor, the Iron Curtain. So you couldn't see who was, the media couldn't sit there and spy on the Giants.
Right. So essentially, yeah, a lot of time is wasted on trying to hide who the starting pitchers are going to be. But, you know, with this not announcing now, I was emailing you on Friday to try to find out who the Dragons were going to start. And you said the talk out of Nagoya was that Kenshin Kawakami was going to start. But I thought, you know, that's odd because I figured and I thought that was going to start. So the story I wrote, we just covered it up. We took all the names out and we said it's just thrown the rotation into a mix because Yoshimi the ace is out with an injury.
That's the talk was it was going to be Tateyama versus
Kenshin, yeah.
Kawakami. And, you know, it's just all a waste of time. And after game one, the 200-year-old manager of the Dragons, Morimichi Takagi.
No, you didn't.
What? I didn't.
You added 129 years to the guy. Well, I'm sorry, 130.
Okay, he doesn't look a day over 100. Okay, now, anyway, Takagi comes out and said, yeah, we didn't expect to see Tateyama, but we expected to see Tateyama, but we were prepared for whoever they sent, and we think we fooled them with Nakata, and you know, he was talking about how exciting it was, and I was just thinking, oh, you're picking the starting pitcher for the wrong reason. You pick the starting pitcher who's going to win. This is the whole Japanese baseball thing. You trying to attack weaknesses as opposed to, it's so often, if you pardon the expression, bass backwards, where you try to fool the opponent and go after their weaknesses as opposed to dealing with what you're good at.
Right. Well, Nakata pitched well. They got 5 scoreless innings for him, and I thought Takagi had the best day of the managers on Saturday because all he really had to do was make out the lineup and make a couple of moves, and that was basically it. Wada hits a home run and then gets a single and a 3-run inning, and they had a massive 6-run lead. And they, was it 6-run? Yeah, they made it 6, or did they?
I think.
What's that?
It went to 3-1, and then it went 6-1.
Yeah, so they had a 5-run lead, and they just had to, he had to decide whether he's going to take Jorge Sosa out of the game when he was doing one of his high wire acts or leave him in, and they took him out, and they brought in closer Yamai in the 8th to get out of the jam, and that was about all he had to do. I thought Junji Ogawa, I said before the series started that Tateyama, the Dragons really don't hit him well, and they don't hit Muranaka very well, and I figured that those two were going to start the first 2 games, and he didn't do it, and I thought that was a bad choice in terms of starting Ishikawa just because he's the ace. In my humble opinion, I thought that was a mistake, but...
The reason he's the ace is because in Japan, they don't change who the ace is. I feel like he's the team, he's going to be the ace. Or, you know, it's very good they have somebody who's on the team as a former ace. You know, somebody like Kenshin Kawakami who left. But, no, he's the ace because he was the ace 5 years ago. He's the second best guy. In my opinion, he's a better, he's a safer bet than Muranaka. But because Muranaka has got tremendous stuff, but you just never know who's going to show up. But, and he has pitched quite well of late. I don't think he's a bad choice, but when you've got Tateyama and Muranaka, why mess around with Ishikawa?
I'm with you, man. I'm with you. And
the other thing about, as far as we're going to talk about the managing, you're trailing by 2 runs in the 7th inning. Okay, now Vladimir Ballantyne has just hit his home run to lead off the 7th inning. I think it was a leadoff homer. Next guy gets on base. Okay, now you've got the tying run at the plate, and you're trailing by 2 runs on the road, and you sacrifice? What is going on? I think mind control. Tokyo Dome, Nagoya Dome, I think that's what you could be complaining about.
I think they're just so used to doing it that they don't even think about game situations anymore.
Well, I think they were thinking about game situations too much is the problem because that's like, you know, you've got to get a run on the board. And I know I've heard the logic. I've talked with Haruki, or the former Lions and Oryx manager, about this quite. I talked to Norifumi Nishimura, the former Lotte manager, about this, you know. And the logic is you got to get the first run before you got the second run, and you got to put pressure on the defense. And but you got to score runs. And it wasn't like it was the leadoff. I think it had the leadoff man on. If it had been off of the order, he might have done something differently. But it was the middle of, you know, he was looking at the tail end of the order thinking one run's all I'm going to get. But what does that say about your offense? I mean, one run's all I'm going to get? Well, why don't they just pack up the tent? The tent is because of course they so might come into the game.
Yeah, I don't get it. I don't get the strategy a lot of times, but I know it's Japanese baseball. I know they like to bunt, and getting a run closer, being one run closer, gives you that chance to, even in Nagoya Dome, I think the thinking is, well, Ballantyne hit one home run, maybe he can get a hold of something else. Maybe if we get runners on in the 9th, we can make something happen. So I don't agree with it. I think I kind of understand it. I'm trying to understand it. I know a lot of fans get really frustrated even watching and thinking about all the bunting that takes place. But, you know, watching, you know, conversely, when you watch the major leagues, sometimes those guys don't bunt at all. when you think that, you know, a late game situation in where they could bunt and get guys over in a scoring position, they don't do it. So, yeah, there's too much over here. It's definitely strange. I wouldn't do it myself.
I'm just thinking, you know, okay, what essentially what the situation was, okay, Valentin leads off the seventh with a home run. Next guy, Kawabata, walks. Now you've got Miyamoto, who's a good veteran player. You know, he's not a great hitter, but he's a decent hitter.
He's a great contact hitter, though, and that's a good time to put on a play.
He's a great contact hitter. Kawabata's got decent speed. I mean, he's not blazing fast, but he's not slow of foot either. Okay, Miyamoto runs okay. He runs pretty well for a 38-year-old or 40.
40.
Whatever it is. He's not out age yet. Okay, and Hatakeyama is coming up, who has been hurt, and he hasn't been in great form, but he's still a decent hitter. And then you got Aikawa, who's just tagging the ball. arguably, I mean, of course, you're leading off with Yuhei Takai, which is a kind of move I like, because the guy showed a lot of promise, and the guy I know you would not like, because he's essentially a novice as a hitter. Anyway, he's got the most dependable part of his lineup coming up, and the plan is to go for one run and with no out. And I don't understand it. And then he's got, you know, he can call the hitter if he wants it. You know, he can extend that lineup, and he did, but he ran out of outs. So I don't know. Anyway, it's not a big deal, because in the bottom of the inning, things got out of hand real quickly, and that was the end of the game.
Yeah. And then today, Tateyama comes and he throws 6 shutout innings, and he looked fantastic. And I kept thinking to myself, well, this should have been game one. You know, this should have been the Swallows taking a 1-0 lead in the series and coming back with Muranaka and striking, you know, at least some very strong concerns in the hearts of the Dragons, because they know they haven't hit him at all recently, and they're going to send out a guy, a young pitcher in Yamauchi. So I just thought they screwed it up. Maybe they still have a chance, obviously, to win the series. So
Yamauchi pitched really well. I was pretty pleased with the way he pitched. He's got I haven't seen him pitch much, but he's got some. He had in my mind, he had really good movement. He missed a lot of pitches, and his location was not great, but he did have good movement. He throws his sinking fastball, which really it's I don't know. It's like a forkball fastball. This thing has gotten velocity, and it really drops pretty good.
Yeah, I didn't get to see him pitch at all today, but I've seen him pitch in the past. And, yeah, he keeps the ball down in the zone and everything, but he has a tendency, which is what happened today, to lose a ball up in the zone, and that's what Valentin hit for a home run, his second in two games here in the playoffs. So
the other thing that was interesting was Tateyama, you know, Valentin went deep, I think, as the fourth inning, and then in the bottom of the fourth inning, Tateyama, I was waiting for a rock with a diagram showing what the strike zone was. 9 pitches into the inning, and they've got runners on first and second.
Yeah.
And then they get a tapper back to the mound that with the, I guess they were going or something, because I didn't see it. I don't know how the runners got to third on a tapper back to the mound, but anyway, runners second and third, then they walk Donoe to face Tachike, and you had this, just a wonder the game story was this Texas back by Tanishige fouled off about 4-2-2 pitches.
Yeah, but he never really had a good swing, and the pitch he ends up hitting, what did he fly out to center, right?
That was the second time. That was the 7 pitch at bat. The 10 pitch at bat, he struck out. He missed a fastball.
Yeah, okay.
Here's the other thing is, not only did he foul off 4 pitches, I think 3 of them were ball 4.
Yeah.
Tateyama's like that. I mean, they were ball 4, but the umpire could easily have rung any of those up. So it was a very tough Pepsi at bat, and he didn't get one past him. And Tateyama had a nice comment after the game. He said, "Look, we're both veterans. I know what he wanted. He knew, you know, he could read what I was trying to do. I could read what he was trying to do. It was just, you know, throw strikes and go after him."
Right.
That's going after him by throwing a foot out of the zone. I'm not certain what he means, but he was both were very good at getting guys to go after pitches out of the zone. And it was kind of a fun game.
Well, it's good. It's good that we have these series both going to three games. It'd be exciting. Sticking with your picks?
Why wouldn't I?
Okay. Just making sure. Just giving you another chance, crack the door open, see if you step through it.
Okay. No, I'm not going through any doors.
All right, well, let's talk about our retiring players now. Tomoaki Kanemoto had his final game, and I was so much rooting for him to get that RBI and pass Shigeo Nagashima on the all-time RBI list. And he had his chances. He had a couple chances, including two on and one out in the seventh inning against Daisuke Miura of the Yokohama Bay Stars. Now, do you know what the significance of him facing Daisuke Miura in his final game was? No, you don't, because you don't know what I was going to say.
Let's see. They're both, well, no, one's Kanemoto's from Hiroshima and Miura's from Osaka. Oh, he got his hitter, his first home run off of Miura.
Oh, you looked at my computer somehow through cyberspace. Yeah, Kanemoto's first career home run for his first career RBIs came off of Miura.
Brilliant. Well, it's fitting that they were playing each other. I mean, there's two of the, Kanemoto, everybody knows what a good player he was. And I think a lot of people, Miura for several years, he and it's just a tragedy, or not tragic, it's normal for, this is the normal tragedy of baseball, is sometimes the best players are right in front of your eyes, but because they play in, especially with pitchers or hitters, they play in park absolutely killing their staff, and they play for bad teams, so they don't get, especially if they're pitchers, they don't win.
Right.
And Hiroki Kuroda were, I think, for a stretch of about 5 years, the two best pitchers in the Central League, and people would go like, what? So.
Right, the ballpark's factors, yeah. Well, It was a great game for Kanemoto. I didn't see it all, but I saw about the last four and a half innings, so about half the game. And the one thing that really struck me was the fact that, first of all, that he popped up in the seventh inning with two on, and he was trying to, I think he was not trying just to tie Nagashima with the RBIs, but I think he was trying to hit a home run and then pass him. And that, he missed a two seam fastball that was pretty hittable, but remember I talked about how he likes to pull everything. He's trying to pull it and he got his hands out of position. He didn't make good contact and popped it up. And the other thing was that he caught the final out of the game, which was really nice for him. I thought, Sho Aranami hits a ball and he finally hit a ball in the air. With some pop on it, and it's twisted and sliced right toward Kanemoto, and he catches the ball, and Randy Messenger pitched the shutout and goes all the way as a 3-0 win. It's pretty nice, night for Kanemoto. Made a very nice, I guess that it was an average speech for me. He wasn't really emotional during the speech, which kind of struck me because he was emotional during that press conference when he made the announcement. But I guess between the time he made the announcement and the actual game, I think he just came to terms with it.
I hope.
Emotionally.
Smart guy, I think he could. I mean, we're talking space of about a month now, so.
Right. So, and so he didn't cry, and I thought that was kind of interesting that he didn't cry, having cried in the, kind of lost, losing it in the press conference, but in front of all those people out there, Koshi, and when you really are emotional and it's really the end, I thought he would cry. But the other thing is, all the players lined up, the Tigers players lined up in front of the dugout, and he shook hands with all the players. And when he got to Takahiro Arai, he smacked him in the face. And, he's picked on him, in terms of, he's come out and say, well, this guy doesn't hit, so I got to do more. Work. I mean, he's come out and verbally give him a smackdown, essentially, in public.
Smackdown. Well, he's been that. He's been that way with Arai in public since Arai joined the Tigers.
Yeah, exactly.
It's always been him kidding him. I don't know how much of that is kind of a joke, is for public consumption.
Well, I think a lot of it. I mean, he ended up smacking Keiichi Hirano as well. He smacked him once, and then he smacked him on the other side of the cheek too. And it was all playful. It was all in jest. But yeah, I think you're right. I don't know how much of that behind the scenes is real Big Brother, because one of his other nicknames is Big Brother as well as Iron Man. I don't know how much of that is being the Big Brother picking on the little brother or trying to just taking little jabs at him, ribbing, or how much of it is actual sumo type seniority picking on the guy.
Yeah, I would be interested to find out, but I have great things from a great player. And a good way to go out. I don't have, it's hard to think of additional things to say about Kanemoto that I haven't said, that I haven't said already, at least, from my limited resources.
Yeah. Well, yeah, good luck to him. It was fun to watch. It was really nice. And then I watched the speech and everything, and I saw the news, and it was really nice. It was a good way for him to go out. And then Hiroki Kokubo of the South Bank Hawks. Now, of course, it wasn't his last game. It was his last regular season game. And it was very unspectacular. In fact, it was spectacularly unspectacular because the Hawks got no hit by Oryx or Yuki Nishi. And I'm saying this as I laugh because this is a guy who barely finishes, I think it was his third career complete game. And he throws a no-no. I like him. I like him. And, he was one of the reasons, again, I had high expectations for the Buffaloes. But
yeah, to me, he looks a lot, reminds me a lot of Yoshihisa Hirano and his, just when he was sort of making a name for himself.
Mm-hmm.
A guy with a decent control, a couple pitches. You thought, this guy could, do something with those other, his supplementary pitches and do something. And, did something with the Hawks. And of course the Hawks haven't, hit anybody. So it was almost like bound to happen. It was a throwaway game and the Hawks threw it away in the biggest way you possibly can.
Right. And Kokubo started and he went 0-for-3 and Nishi. He's the third person this season to throw a no-hitter. Since the two-league system, that is the highest number. It ties the Japan Pro Baseball record. And, pretty nice game for him. What do you have, 9 strikeouts, 12 groundouts? Really nice game for him. I wish we could have seen more of that from the team during the regular season when I picked them to finish second. But we don't worry about me.
Right, and... Yeah, the thing is that we've had quite a few in the Central League. We've had a steady supply in Central League now and then, but the Pacific League has been kind of a no-hit desert.
Yeah, and of course with the DH, you figure that it's going to be even harder, and I understand. And of course this guy, what did he have? He'd only gone the distance 3 times in his career. I mean, he just really was out of left field for a guy like this to throw a no-no. You think about, the fact that the Hawks were the third place team. They had 65 wins. They had the second highest number of wins in the Pacific League. And they're playing in a guy, Kokubo, his final regular season game. They know they're going on to the playoffs, but you're right. I think they kind of threw it away mentally. They just probably nailed it in. They figured they were going to win the game or at least do something. So they didn't realize the guy was going to try out there.
That was part of it.
Oh, well, interesting. So Kokubo, his last game could be Monday. We'll have to see how that goes, but good luck to them. Now we're going to talk about the WBC, and Wednesday, Koji Yamamoto was put in charge, let's say, of the WBC team. And immediately he says, this week I heard the talk was, he wants Yu Darvish on the team. Duh.
Well, apparently, the story was, it's the way Japan works. It's all connections. Well, who could we get who might influence Yu Darvish's choice to be on the team? So they've made their, I don't know this, but that was the talk. Okay. Masataka Nashida, who managed Yu Darvish for a couple of years.
Right.
They could have got somebody really good, but they could have got somebody really good to manage the team.
this is not your first choice, I know.
Yamamoto?
Yeah.
No. But that's, I've already said it. The reasons given by Sadaharu Oh at the press conference were that Yamamoto is a good communicator. Now, that may be most of my hang-ups with Yamamoto are over his player development, although that seems to be kind of a touchy subject this week. when he was with a manager of the Carp, and he basically let the team get old so that Tomoaki Kanemoto, when he was a young guy, could sit and watch players get old in the outfield instead of playing himself. So Yamamoto talked about Yu Darvish, and he also talked about, he was asked, now I'm guessing he was asked about Hideki Matsui. I don't think he would brought up Matsui at first, but he said, hey, what, you know, the guy's a great player. I understand he's practicing in New York. Like, well, that's important that he's practicing, you know, he's not out playing golf all the time. But he's going to
practice all he wants.
Play in the last WBC. He didn't want to play in the 2006. And then when he's hurt, when he could barely walk after his knee surgery without assistance, he wanted to play in 2009. So I guess now that he can barely play, he wants to play in 2013.
Good luck with that. But, so Yamamoto, we got Nashida is one of the coaches also.
Position players, Masataka Nashida.
And Kazuyoshi Tatsunami.
He's going to be the batting coach, I guess.
Kazuyoshi, yeah. And then Tashiro-san.
Right. Oryx coach.
Oryx coach is going to be on there. So, yeah, not a spectacular. I like the pick of Tatsunami because he's such a, and I always listen to his commentary when he's doing color commentary, and he's so good at explaining why batters are looking for particular pitches and what pitchers are trying to do, and it's so clear when he explains it. He's so good. I think he's going to, you talk about Osan talking about Yamamoto being a good communicator. I think Tatsunami is going to communicate that really well to the players. I don't know that it's going to process. He can process it from the bench in game, but you know, they can yell stuff out since nobody knows Japanese on the other side in the WBC. I think they can just yell stuff out. Hey, look, he's trying to throw this. He's trying to do that. Maybe nobody will understand. It'd be interesting.
It is interesting. The other choice, he picked Osamu Higashio, who as his basically the head, he has two head coaches. This is sort of the Ochiai technique. He's got a head coach for pitchers and a head coach for position players, who's Nashida. And his head coach in charge of pitchers is Osamu Higashio, who, to be honest, I can't be objective about it because I just really can't stand the guy. So I can't say whether he's a good or bad manager. He was.
Well, don't mince words with us. I mean, tell us how you actually feel about the man.
I personally dislike him. That's I can't really be objective about him. I find it. He's really arrogant. But other than that, I don't know much about him. He won't talk to you at the time of the day unless you're going to do him some good, I think. But that was managing. I don't know how he is when he's not managing or when he's not having people arrested for playing poker in his house. Sorry.
Well, I remember when he was outgoing at the Cebu Lions and some of the players just shaking their heads about him, and including some foreign players saying that that he was not right in the head, essentially.
No, one of the things they mentioned today was Higashio wants to talk to Matsuzaka. Higashio apparently did have a very good relationship with Matsuzaka. The Lions drafted Matsuzaka out of high school. Higashio gave him the ball he used to win his 200th game.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I think that was a big thing. They apparently did have a good relationship. That might have been the thing. They'll see how Matsuzaka's pitching. The way Matsuzaka pitched in the first WBC, he really came of age. He was coming of age at that time. Last time why he won the MVP, I'm not really certain, but he was effective. He was pretty effective. A couple of players were more. I thought Iwakuma was probably a better pitcher in 2009 than him.
Well, yeah, Higashio is going to be on the bench. It'll be interesting to see how he's received by the Japanese players. Who the other coaches are?
The pitching coach is Tsuyoshi Yoda, who coached Fujihara in 2009 and is an NHK analyst, former Dragons. He was a Dragons setup guy back in the late 90s, mid-90s. The batting coach you mentioned, Tatsunami. Infield base running coach you mentioned, Takashiro, who also coached in 2009. And the outfield base running coach is Koichi Ogata, who's a former Giants coach, who also coached in 2009. So I kind of like, you know, he's basically got a bunch of old guys, He's got a pair of old guys, and then he's got Tatsunami, who's a new guy, and then he's got some coaches who've been there and they know what's going on. So I kind of like, as much as I'm no fan of Higashio, but I can't say where he's good or bad. He has things about him I don't like, but as a manager, he had some marginal success during the seasons with his teams. Okay, I do like the coaching staff because of all the experience having been in the WBC. And they're going to have Hara is going to be around as a special advisor, which I think is a good thing, too, because I think they really wanted Hara. He might even have been their first choice before Akiyama, but they might have turned him down. I'd heard Hara had already been decided. So anyways, now, speaking of managers.
Yeah, we had a change at Oryx, Hiyoshi Moriwaki, who was successful in a little interim stint. Was he 9-2?
Was 7-2.
7-2, okay. And they declared him the manager, and he said he came out right away and said, hey, all the positions are open for competition except for first base, where Lee DeHoe is, who had an outstanding season, especially for a first-year guy.
Really good.
Yeah, especially for a first-year guy. So I think we can expect maybe a little bit more from him next year even. But I just know Moriwaki as a background guy. He's one of those guys who kind of hides in the trees on the side. He's not one of those front men. You know, he's not a Nakahata type where he's going to be out there dancing in front of the media, talking, doing the rah-rah thing. I talked to him before because I remember he took over the Hawks when Sadahara Oh in 2006 had cancer surgery. And I remember talking to him, and he just really didn't strike me as that kind of guy who is going to be out in front, is going to motivate players a lot, is going to do he might be a really hard-working coach, but he doesn't seem to have the front man side down, you know, the talking to the media, the being personable with some of the media people. I don't know how that's going to work out, but none of that really matters. What matters is that they win.
Well, unless you're working for Chinichi, the guy who reminds me of Moriwaki is Daijiro Oishi, who I think excelled as a head coach under Terry Collins. And Moriwaki, I think, was a pretty successful head coach with SoftBank.
Mm.
Interestingly enough, okay, he was one of the candidates to take over after O left, but he was not, the team didn't do well with him as the manager in 2006. He basically managed the Hawks all spring training when O was managing the national team.
Right.
O had surgery for stomach cancer, and Moriwaki was the manager basically for most of the season, I'd say three-quarters of the season. Is he a personable guy? He's a real nice, friendly guy. He's easy to get along with. I know he was a Boomer Welch told me what a great teammate he was when Boomer was with the Hawks. Yeah, he's a very personable guy. As far as being a presence and being a leader, that I don't see.
That's the same for me. That's the impression I have as well.
Now, interesting thing with him is that, of course, Moriwaki was with the Hawks when he was passed over for manager by Akiyama. Akiyama was brought in as sort of a co-head coach for a couple of years. And then when Akiyama became manager, Moriwaki became the head coach for 1 year, and then he was fired. He was replaced by Daijiro Oishi.
Right.
Who Okada replaced at Oryx, and then who now Moriwaki's replacing.
Revolving door, yeah.
Revolving door. Now, the next manager we have is Tsutomu Ito.
Right.
Was Hisanobu Watanabe's predecessor at Lotte, and who has recently been managing in Korea with the Doosan Bears. And the Korean-owned Lotte Marines have brought him in to manage to replace Norifumi Nishimura.
Good luck.
He started out as a real kind of a lighthearted, carefree guy, but as when the Lions, he had a tough time at the end of his career with the Lions, in that he's a guy who aged about 10 years in his final season and just went right off the deep end. but he looks healthy now. Hopefully his balance has returned. And speaking of Mr. Nabe Q, Hisanobu Watanabe, he will be back with Seibu Lions.
Yeah, now, one quick note, Rakuten is going to make Dave Okubo their farm team skipper.
Wow.
I saw that note earlier. Yeah, so, yeah, getting back to Nabe Q, yeah, they're going to bring him back for next season. I think he's done a good job. He's had a team, he's had that team in the top three the past 3 years, and that's while getting kids like Asamura, Akiyama, some playing time and getting them developed to where they're actually, they contributed today for sure. I don't know how much. Everybody contributed, but
Watanabe was a big part. I think you look at the players who came up under Watanabe. Ito was good in that he gave a lot of players a chance to play, but Watanabe was even better. Guys, Kataoka really became a regular player. Takumi Kuriyama.
Kuriyama, yeah.
Really good player under him. Genjiro, of course, became a good player under, became a regular player under him. The pitching staff really, really took off.
Yeah, and I mean, even this year, they've gotten guys like Nogami has pitched fairly well. Togame has pitched fairly well. He's a rookie, I believe. Oishi, we're still waiting for him to develop into something. Kikuchi Yuse, whose secondary pitches were just garbage. Essentially, and everybody was sitting on his fastball, and they hit it because it's not, you know, the most overpowering thing in the world. He got him to win some games for him this year. He's developed some players. If you look closely, if you don't look at every single hit and every single run allowed and every single inning, you look at the big picture. Yeah, he's done a fairly good job, I think.
Yeah, I think the thing I like, I've said it before about Watanabe. In terms of, I think his great talent, his skill is that he has no fear of using a guy from the minors just because nobody knows who he is.
Yep.
And when a guy comes up, he'll throw him into the game. He's very much like, in this respect, Tatsunori Hara. He'll take a minor leaguer who's had marginal success or a great success, and who may be over his head, but saying, look, I trust you, go out there, do your, you know, don't worry, because if you fail, you know, I want you to do your best, and if you fail, you're going to get another chance.
Right.
But, yeah, you know, everybody makes a dumb decision. You know, he does make decisions.
Exactly.
And I like him for that. I mean, one of Mike DeJong, our correspondent in Saitama, and this debate went on last week about what he was good at, and Mike doesn't like his tactics, and I think his tactics are pretty ordinary. I don't think he's nearly as bad as somebody like Hara. Horrible.
He's horrible, yeah. And we'll see that when the second stage starting on Wednesday.
Hara is much better than he used to be. He's probably not a lot worse than anybody right now, but a few years ago. Terrible.
I'm sure he'll give us a little bit of fodder to discuss on next week's show.
The thing with Watanabe is, and one thing I think which is an issue, and you have to ask, is the Lions are extremely good, and I say this every year because it happens every year, they always suffer a lot of injuries. I think they get hurt more than any other team in Japan. I don't know why it is, and how some of that is my impression, but they're better than any team in Japan, other than perhaps the Fighters, I think, now, at just bringing guys out of the minors, throwing them into games, and getting production. So, you know, that's his strength, but I have to wonder why so many guys, and now again, this is not objective analysis, this is not something I can prove, but I have this impression that people get hurt a lot.
Well, let's hope that you and I stay healthy and we can have a good show next week.
Thank you.
All right, so the second stage starts on Wednesday. I think the Swallows are going to be coming to Tokyo to play the Giants, and I think the Lions will be going up to Sapporo to play against the Fighters. And by the time we talk to you again, those second stage series could be over.
Indeed. Well, they should, and probably should be over since the Fighters, the Giants, really, what do they have to, like, show up on the field pretty much to win. They
right.
need They need two wins and a tie.
Yeah. We're calling it, I talked to one of the beat writers today, we're calling it Stage 2 Series 6.7. 6.7 game series.
Okay, not six. Well, it's not even six, is it? Because it is, yeah. One, oh, 6.75, maybe. I have a question for the listeners. If you want to, if anybody can explain the second stage format in 30 words or less, maybe we should have a prize.
You don't even want to buy me dinner now. You want to buy the listeners a prize. All right. All right. YAKYUJOHN@gmail.com is where you can send the answers to Jim's question and the or your MP3 questions to the show. And whatever version of whatever software you're using, 6.0 or 2.1, whatever, we'll accept it and we'll play it on the show next week. Thanks for listening, everybody. Enjoy the playoffs.
Yeah. Hope you're listening next week.
All right. Good night.